Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Cleveland sucks! You losers! 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 How does it feel? Oh, that was embarrassing!
Go Steelers! Go Steelers! Say go Steelers! Go Steelers!
Welcome to the Steelers Outpost Podcast, a proud member of the Armchair All-Americans Network. It's January 18th, 2021. This is Tom coming to you from Sawdust Studios in the Washington, D.C. Outpost. Nick joins me from the Houston Outpost. Steeler Nation, you got your wish. You won't have Randy Feetner to kick around anymore. Now you can kick around Matt Canada.
Matt Canada. Oh boy, the changes are sweeping and dramatic in Steeler Nation. Once again, promoting the quarterback's coach to offensive coordinator. Got a lot of thoughts on that. First thought being, I'm extremely glad they fired Randy. You know, now you get this weird sense of remorse because now Randy's become a person. He's not just an idea of the abject failure of the Steelers' offensive struggle. So you're like, I don't want to say I'm glad they fired Randy the man, but I'm glad Randy Feetner is no longer calling plays for the Steelers. Let's put it that way. And it was really, I almost felt like it was 50-50 at the end of the season. Just because this whole thing of Ben coming back complicates everything, and Feetner being Ben's guy, and us sort of realizing over the course of the season that the offense is really a three-headed monster of Feetner, Ben, and Tomlin, and wondering, like, oh, they're going to keep Ben, so they might keep Feetner. And I thought that the odds of Feetner getting fired were lower than we might have thought. And I don't think they take too many bets on fired coaches, but there's plenty of other bets you can take on Bet Online, and that's where I prefer to take mine. I'll tell you what, Bet Online has the best props, the best odds, player odds, team odds, and coaching props in the business. They give you more online options to wager than any other place. So head to Bet Online today. Use their promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Bet Online, cha-ching, your online sportsbook experts.
Well, let me just do a quick recap of the other coaching changes that have taken place before it, but let's go back to the main story. So offensive line coach Sean Surrett let go after 1 year, and defensive backs coach Tom Bradley gone as well. We have one other change, and that's James Daniel, who retired as the tight ends coach after 82 years of service to the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, the man coached Heath, but I almost felt like I was burying the lead on this Randy firing. It should be rejoicing, right? We should all be happy about that. But we know there's so many questions in the Steelers' future that there's a lot of work left to be done. And like I said, I felt bad a little bit for a second there for the actual man. I'm like, hey, this is our voices getting recorded for eternity here on the podcast. You don't want to seem insensitive to a guy who seems, altogether, he seemed like a pretty cool, chill guy. That's basically why they kept him around. I will always thank him for the farts bouncing around in a skillet comment he made a couple weeks back, which really spelled the end of the Steelers' wide receiving core as we knew it at the time. But yes, so Feetner is gone, and the Steelers kind of stick with the status quo, and they hire from within by upgrading Matt Canada to play caller. I have a lot of feelings on this, but I think I've distilled it down to one opinion. You want the Steelers to go and get someone from the outside because you want someone young and innovative. That's what we said is our biggest issue with the Steelers. Offensively and defensively, they've relied too much in the Tomlin era on, hey, we just have the best athletes and we're going to do what we do. If we play the Jacksonville Jaguars league best defense, who's great outside, we don't care. We're still going to try and attack outside. Dick LeBeau at one time actually had the Steelers on that list of innovative teams with the 3-4 zone blitzing defense, which wasn't really opponent specific as much as it was exotic, the word we always hear them use to describe it. Erotic, sometimes when you are a Steelers fan, I mean, it gets to be an enjoyable thing to watch, but chaotic. And right there we have the song of Dick LeBeau. But the 3-4 zone blitzing scheme was just, it was wild. It was, it was equally wild against every team. It's not like when the Patriots go into a opponent who has terrible run defense and they're like, hey, we haven't run in 3 weeks, but we're going to run this week because we know we can do it. It was more like, nobody can figure out this Steelers defense week to week because it's so crazy and we have the horses to make it happen, right? But eventually people caught up to that. And now here we are today, still playing one high safety almost the entire game. And then we saw the same thing with Randy Feitner, right? Just not game plan specific planning and the league lowest use of play action, where we have found out in today's day and age, play action is one thing that all the top offenses have in common every year. Very low on the motion usage, which is incredibly frustrating because motion is another thing modern offenses use to be successful. Both of those things are free yardage, right? Like, motion doesn't cost you anything, and at best, it shows you what defense the opponent is playing. Are they man or are they zone? What are the rules on each play? It also enables you to move some of your players around and cause some confusion for the defense at no cost to your offense at all, right? And the Steelers aren't utilizing these concepts, so this is why we wanted somebody modern. And the Steelers went out, and they got a guy who was already on the staff for this incredibly unmodern, incredibly uncreative offense that the Steelers ran this year. However, that guy, Matt Canada, actually does fall into the modern coordinator list, right? That's why they picked him up, because he's had success in the college ranks, and he's been in the NFL a little bit, but his offense is greatly predicated on motions, and everybody in Steelers Nation kind of mocks and makes fun of him, just reducing his offense to, oh, just get ready for jet sweeps. He's just going to use tons of jet sweeps. And that may be true, but from what you and I saw, it doesn't look like he had any say this year. He had a minute amount of say when we saw the Steelers run a bunch of jet sweeps successfully, I might add, earlier in the season. They added no wrinkles to said jet sweep, so eventually, of course, every NFL defense caught up to it. And instead of, you know, furthering the concept, they just stopped and gave up on it. So my view from the outside is that Canada didn't have much of an influence, and we haven't seen the what surface he can scratch. But he does fall under that category of, hey, this might actually be the modern offensive young guy that we were looking for.
I saw what you saw, and my feeling is that Feitner, maybe Tomlin, but Feitner saw this guy as a bright new shiny toy, and the shiny toy told him about this jet sweep, and Randy does as Randy does. He used it, and then he overused it, and it became ineffective, and he said, this doesn't work, and he threw it away.
Right.
So if we're so just some more thoughts about Canada. When you pull up, first of all, they've updated his wiki page already.
Good.
It's really interesting that the most time he has spent at one team is 4 years at Indiana. The other time, every other stint is 1 to 2 years. I mean, this guy's personal life must be a disaster.
Yeah.
But as you mentioned, I mean, this is his first year in the NFL. I kind of like the idea that he did get at least 1 year of seasoning to sort of get used to the waters in the NFL. But talk about, this is where innovation comes from, right? It comes from college.
Yes.
And this guy is steeped in college experience at multiple schools.
With success at each one of those schools. And by the way, it's not just jet sweeps. It's a lot of motion. He did some crazy stuff at Pitt with like three people in motion at the same time kind of stuff. Where obviously, you know, you can only have one guy technically in motion in the NFL, but like formation shifts. And they're pretty wacky, and they might be, some of them looked semi-gimmicky, but some of them were really cool, where you have like a tight end step back and a receiver on the other side of the line step back and they kind of crisscross or whatever. Like, there's just, he uses a lot of motion, which he finds ways to get the ball in the hands of the playmakers, which is going to be huge since you have Deontay Johnson and Chase Claypool, both guys who are great with running with the ball. you know, an open space and whatever that is. So it's not just – I was trying to make the point like, yeah, he does jet sweeps. But the funny thing is Pittsburgh hadn't seen a jet sweep in the 5 years since they've been used, so we just reduce it to that one type of play. But he does do a lot of cool modern offensive things. He got Pitt to be good on offense, so that's a pretty good job. And I do agree with you. I actually like the fact that he was able to sit relatively hands-off, it seems, and observe – how bad an NFL offense can be when you make the wrong decisions this year. So I do think that this experience was valuable. And you're saying Randy saw jet sweeps and thought this is a nice toy, and then they broke and he didn't know how to fix them. I think that it's not just Randy. I think it's Randy and Ben saw that. And this is the downside of Canada as an offensive coordinator, which is his offense and Ben Roethlisberger's skill sets have nothing in common. Ben doesn't like to go from under center. Ben doesn't like play action. Ben doesn't want to learn new terminology and motions and stuff like that. And so this matchup is extremely weird. And my caveat for Canada is I hope Tomlin and the Steelers have the balls to say to Ben, like, look, we can make some compromises here. We're going to keep this guy in the house, but like, we can't be hostage to your 2010 offense. You're going to have to go under center a little bit. You're going to have to run some play action. And will that happen? History says no. But maybe not, because they made him throw short when Todd Haley got there and stuff like that. So that's what I'm thinking the weird match is.
Well, you know, 4 years ago is a lifetime, so it's hard to match eras. I wonder if the fact that they let Randy go is an indication either Ben changed his mind or Ben really doesn't have that much influence on coaching staff.
Well, it's fine for him to have influence. It's just, what's that level? I mean, he should definitely have influence. But yeah, at a certain point, like, we'll give you Randy. We'll try Randy. And Randy was such a colossal train wreck that he has to go. And like, look, Ben, like, you're one of the heads in the brain trust. You're not the whole thing. So I hope that's how they handle this Canada thing.
Let's not forget about the magic that Canada produced with Mason Rudolph this year.
You're actually right. He was the quarterback coach, and Mason Rudolph did take a step forward. So that is one little piece of evidence that Canada has done a good job. But honestly, you can't really chalk that up to that. Mason had a whole year to start and then get to sit on the bench and watch the game again. But I think some people are really upset about it because we wanted a sweeping change. But when I was looking at the offensive coordinators on the market, there's not a guy out there who's going to work. There's a bunch of retreads, and there's Jay Gruden, and there was rumors of Daryl Bevel, who is legitimately maybe the only lateral move for Randy Feitner you could make. I mean, he is the prior coordinator in Seattle, and he's run for the sake of running, 30 run attempts, otherwise the game doesn't count. Runs high school-level passing game, just slant flats over and over again. So thank God that didn't happen. And I was scared that they'd go backwards in that sense. So I actually think it's a really good hire. Is it going to work out? I don't know, but I'm more in favor of taking the younger guy. How old is Matt Canada? Do you know? Matt Canada age. Let's see. He's 50?
72.
He's 48 years old. He's too old. Does he have a brother? Yeah, well, either way, he at least, you know, it's not all about age. It's about innovation, and he's really had a success in the college game recently with the recent NFL offense. So I actually like the hire. There's definitely a part of me that thinks, like, I just, you know, we'll get into this later, but obviously Ben has announced that he's coming back. He hasn't given an official announcement, but the NFL leaks happened on Sunday morning or Saturday morning, the morning of the game, saying that Ben wants to come back, which is, basically means he told somebody or his agent told somebody that he's coming back. Deontay Johnson posted a photo to Instagram of, screenshotting one of those reports saying Ben's coming back. He said, like, yes, let's go, QB1. So I think there's a lot of evidence saying Ben's coming back. And this is just the weird part about it, which is how they don't mesh at all. And that's why I hope that Tomlin is like, look, we're going to get this new offense installed. Because I don't know if they think they have a chance at the Super Bowl this year, but some of the other things Ben is saying would make that really difficult for the Steelers to get to the Super Bowl. But, yeah, so to sum this all up, Matt Canada, good option. He's got the more modern, innovative mind that we were looking for. He has familiarity with Pittsburgh. And the bad part is it doesn't match what they have been doing recently on offense at all.
The head scratcher, I mean, it's not a head scratcher in that I think we needed to keep this guy at all costs. I'm just curious about what the math was on Sean Surratt.
Yes.
Obviously, you and I think, well, we're going to talk about it. We think the Steelers need to find offensive linemen right out of the gate in the draft. But it was a direct cause of a pathetic running game, the offensive line was.
Yeah.
And the question is that Surratt? Obviously, he has something to do with it. But from everything I understand, he sort of carried the mantle for Mike Munchak. There's more than just following his game plan, obviously. But that line kind of fell apart before our eyes. Pouncey got old. I hate to say it, but
right.
DeCastro aged or he was hurt all season. Filer wasn't the guy, and he got hurt. There are problems with the offensive line. It's not like he just inherited the line from 3 years ago. Well, he inherited it, and then it started crumbling.
Yeah, that one is interesting. The thing I think about with his firing is Mike Tomlin's exit press conference. Once again, some people were saying he didn't say much in that press conference. I disagreed. I mean, I thought that he was pretty obvious that there would be some big changes. And Fietner going, 2 days later, along with a bunch of other coaches, is right. And there's a particular quote he had in response to the running game being so bad. Of like, listen, if you're dead last in anything, you got to change. He said something along those lines. So that's what the Sean Surratt thing seems to indicate to me. It's a little weird because the best linemen were the young linemen. Dotson, although apparently the Steelers don't think he's the best lineman, starting Filer. Dotson was clearly the best lineman on the Steelers this year. And Chooks actually had a good year. I mean, he wasn't great, but he did well. This isn't like the days of Mike Adams going in there when the Steelers used to put guys in and it was a disaster. And so Banner looked like he was going to hopefully have a good year. Unfortunately, got cut short immediately. So you can check that off the list. And then you can kind of explain some of the bad play between Pouncey and Villanueva as aging. As Villanueva was great last year. But the current year, Villanueva really sort of slid down, and he still played well. He didn't allow a sack or a pressure for a long time during the season, and then the wheels fell off. But he's 33 or 34 years old. I always forget that because, he had the Army stint. So he's older than you would think he would be. Pouncey has been slowly declining over the past few years. So that one, okay, that's obvious. And DeCastro had multiple injuries that he was playing on. So you can explain why they were bad. But you could also ask the question, like, what is there? Did they really all three go bad at the exact same time overnight? Or is there something else going on here? Also, how much of the lack of success in the run game is just due to a lack of commitment in the run game? People have talked about that. And I hate that idea of you just need to run the ball more. It's been proven to be so wrong so many times. Look, Dad, if the Steelers ran the ball more, they'd go 3 and out and make 1 yard instead of 3 and out and making 6 yards, right? They're getting stopped at every turn. But there also is something to be said about the philosophy of we pass 60 times a game. The linemen are on their heels. I think they made a great point on part of my take this morning. PFT commenter said something about the Buffalo Bills game plan where they weren't throwing in the first half against the Ravens. And then in the second half, they were only throwing in the first half versus the Ravens. In the second half, they started running more, and linemen were literally jumping up and high-fiving and celebrating after a six-yard run play. So there is something to that. And I guess all I'm trying to say is there are a lot of factors that have gone into the offensive line being poop besides Sean Surratt. But with the pass blocking being as spotty as it was and the run blocking being as bad as it's been in 60 years, heads are going to roll, and you kind of can't blame them for that.
So why is Tom Bradley, who just got 3 years as a defensive backs coach for the Steelers, gone? The Steelers ranked second in terms of passing defense at 198 yards a game.
That one I do not understand. And your best corners are the two in-house corners, right? Sutton and Hilton. How long has Tom Bradley been the defensive backs coach for the Steelers?
Three years.
Yeah, so he oversaw their development, and Terrell Edmunds has gotten better as well. So I don't know what's going on there. That one is truly confusing, whereas Carnell Lake didn't develop a single player in a while. But that one's confusing. But hey, once again, heads will roll.
So, as I mentioned, James Daniel retired. He started, originally hired by Bill Cowher in 2004.
Heath. That's Heath's coach, man. That's a loss. Look, his crowning achievement is Jesse James to me. The fact that Jesse was so bad at the beginning and we thought this is just such a stopgap. The Steelers need to find a tight end. And he really could have been a Super Bowl winning tight end the year with the Jaguars. I mean, he was very reliable for the Steelers. Obviously, he caught that ball to beat the Patriots. And it just seems like he'd been doing a good job with everybody who came through there. Obviously, Vance, you know, had a much more successful career in Pittsburgh than he did in San Francisco. So it is unfortunate that he's retiring. It's another question mark at maybe the position that has the biggest question mark on the team. Like, they're not going to let go of Ebron and Vance, but one of them's going at least. And you really, that cupboard is bare at tight end, and now the coaching staff is bare. So that one's unfortunate.
So the coaching staff may not be bare. Hasn't Heath spent a little time in the coaching trenches?
Has he? Has he coached before?
I believe so.
When? I don't remember that.
Well, I don't know if he was an official coach, but he was hanging around is my my point. And I wonder if he's a possibility.
He doesn't seem like the guy who would. Like, I always feel like those quiet stars, like, they go and they chill out on a ranch, stuff like that. Like, sure, I would definitely take Heath. But, yeah, I wouldn't count on the Steelers' best tight end ever coming back and saving them by coaching the team. By the way, that never works. Joey Porter was horrible. Carnell Lake was horrible. John Elway is horrible. So maybe be careful what you wish for in that one.
So we have a couple of questionables here. One is a defensive, Terrell Austin was interviewing as the defensive coordinator for the Titans. I don't think he got the job, but it shows he's in the market, or he's marketable.
Yeah, he's got some connections around the league. He was a DC for the Cincinnati Bengals before, so it's not like some random position coach is getting escalated. And I don't know if he's necessarily getting escalated because of his performance for the Steelers. We obviously cannot track his impact almost whatsoever, but he has connections in the league and he's coached before, so that one's not crazy surprising.
Here's something that's really weird is that Kevin Colbert, also his name has come up to go back to Detroit for a stint. Which probably is not going to happen. He's on a year-to-year lease with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I think they hired a coordinator already, or they hired a GM. But
my point is that he came up in conversation. I haven't heard anything that says that he's entertaining a move, especially near the end of his career. But Omar Khan certainly is a guy who's been around since he was like 22 with the Pittsburgh Steelers, whose name has come up several times. Where was he interviewing? Texas?
For the Texans, and I think that even early there was a rumor. Well, last year I think maybe there was something about the Panthers, but luckily he did not get that one. We need to keep that front office intact. I agree with you. Kevin Colbert's not going anywhere. I mean, that would just be shocking. He's going year to year because he wants to retire soon. Especially, why would he want to go to a train wreck like Detroit? That just makes no sense whatsoever. My only hope is that he doesn't retire anytime soon, because good God, if the Steelers lost Ben and Colbert, anything is possible in a bad way. So hopefully they keep him, and definitely Omar Khan. You want all of, you know, Brandon Hunt is the big one that the Steelers Twitter is in love with. You know, he's been getting some buzz for other teams as well. But Omar Khan, Brandon Hunt, those guys you really want to keep in house, because that is where the Steelers tradition of hiring in house actually, you know, is very helpful. And the Steelers have had great success hiring in house for their coaches before. You know, we soured on it because of Randy and Lake and just a number and Butler. I mean, it hasn't been successful recently, right? But especially in somewhere like the front office, that can be really helpful. You know, there's not as many variables. You're just evaluating.
So I was listening to some sports radio this week, and they were talking about the possibility this is there'll be one more year, getting the gang back together for one more year.
Right.
And even Tomlin might be moving on. Under what circumstances would a guy move on? I guess Cowher is a good example of somebody moved on. Did he spend a year outside of football before?
He retired. Yeah. And then he went on TV.
But he retired at was he 50?
Yeah.
When he retired?
Yeah, something like that.
It just seems really young. Maybe
that report is baseless, you know? I've been seeing the same thing. People say that. I think just because it looks good on paper, but really they're not looking at the right paper. They're like, the Steelers have three coaches ever.
I'm not suggesting that report is right. It just brought up the thought or the question, what would compel Tomlin to leave? Like a series of bad years or burnout?
Yeah, exactly.
Which is what I think would happen to Cowher.
That's what I'm saying. That's so far in the future. Tomlin doesn't even look close to burning out. He is vibrant as ever. You know, I talked about this last week with my analysis of Tomlin, that, hey, I think that he is, on one hand, an absolutely unbelievable – he's as good of a thrower as Tom Brady. Like, his player evaluation and his leadership is Tom Brady's throwing and pocket movement. His use of strategy and X's and O's is the equivalent of Tom Brady's running past the line of scrimmage. Like, it's that stark of a comparison. And it's that true. Like, he is really unbelievable at leading and the big picture things, and he's poop at the strategy element of things and stubborn and old school. But that's why I said last week, he should stay. Like, the dream would be another 10 years of Tomlin, but you need new coordinators, because if you fail with these players, this unbelievably talented team over the past 10 years, minus the defense for a lot of those years, which we conveniently forget, then, you know, that leadership's good. I don't see him going anywhere unless there were a couple bad years. The Steelers are going to want that stability, and he's still in the prime of his career for a while.
Let's lay one bit of chatter to rest, and that is the possibility of Juju staying in Pittsburgh.
So this is the big one. Not only did Ben drop the hint to his agent or the reporters or whoever got it to whoever, that's how those things work. When the reporters do that, it's like a Sunday morning news dump, they call it. They put big news, you know, it gets a lot of traction in those early mornings. That's when, like, the Jay Glazer reports of Odell Beckham Jr. getting traded happen. Obviously, there was a report Drew Brees is going to retire before their game. He was trying to motivate his team somehow, right? In that report of Ben saying that he's going to come back, he said that he wants Juju back. And of course he wants Juju back. That's his favorite receiver. He told Antonio Brown that through the media a couple years ago, which led to quite an issue. Obviously, 13 catches, 157 yards, a touchdown. He has great rapport with Juju. Juju is an incredible receiver. We are just spoiled because we saw maybe a top five best receiver of all time when we had Brown, who's just so utterly dominant that it makes it difficult to compare anybody else to him. Is Juju top 10 receiver in the NFL? No. There's definitely a list of 10 guys who are just freak shows above him. Is he 10 to 20? Probably, yeah. He is really good. He can do everything. He can go short. He can go mid-range. He can go long. He has really strong hands. He can catch it over people's head. He's run for 90-yard touchdowns before. He's an unbelievable blocker, and he's very detailed, and his route running is actually good for guys of his size. And I know people bitch about him all the time because he's on TikTok, but he's an incredible, phenomenal guy who's loved by all his teammates. Yes, he was stupid when he gave other teams bulletin board material recently, but I think our buddy Derek DeKid on Twitter put out a list of all the things Hines Ward did in his career, who now we look back with rose-colored glasses. Oh, this would never happen with Hines Ward. It would have been way worse with Hines Ward. Hines Ward was a violent man, and that's why we love him. So I don't understand why we don't love Juju when he has a personality, right? But all I'm trying to say is Juju is an awesome wide receiver who you would do well to keep. However, the Steelers are not just in cap hell. They're in the seventh level of cap purgatory, just waiting to get into hell. I'm implying that purgatory is worse than hell at this moment, which, you know, maybe it is. You're waiting to go to hell. They know they're going to hell, but they're stuck. So they can't keep everybody. They're going to lose a great receiver or a great edge rusher or a great corner or some great linemen. Like, they're going to lose a lot of people. And it's really just Juju's going to get offers from other places, and the Steelers at least have two receivers behind. There's a succession plan for Juju. Deontay and Claypool were inconsistent this year. Deontay needs to learn how to catch the ball on a regular basis. But their high-end talent is actually higher than Juju's. Like, these guys, like, you obviously have Megatron, potentially, in Claypool. You have a sort of Antonio Brown-type player in Deontay Johnson. And worst case, at least there's two guys who can play there, and then there's a James Washington behind them. Yes, you lose your slot receiver, and that's complicated, but at least there's somebody. If you lose Mike Hilton and Cam Sutton, you have Justin Lane behind them. That's a disaster. Or St. Pierre. You literally don't have guys on the roster to field it. So you're going to have to lose Bud. And I think that the way the Steelers have to look at it is like, yeah, this is once again an example of Ben, you're a member of the brain trust, but you're not the whole thing. We know you want to keep Juju. We actually want to keep Juju too. but the rules of the NFL prohibit us from doing that. Unless you want to take Ben's final wishes for one more year where the roster is going to be a lot worse than it was this year. You want to take his final wishes and screw the team over for the next 4 years after that. It can't happen. They can't sign Juju. They're not going to have enough money. They need to prioritize signing Hilton and Sutton, or at least one of them, because that way you're getting star players in their fourth, fifth years who are going to keep that defense together with TJ Watt and Minkah Fitzpatrick for the next, you know, 5 years and keep the ball rolling rather than Juju. And then in 2 years, you know, Deontay comes up being like, oh, crap, we don't have enough money for this guy. And look at him. He's Stephon Diggs now.
What are the odds that we keep Juju?
I think the odds are pretty low, honestly, and I might not be able to tell you exactly what they are, but Bet Online can, because football is at the very, very end. There's a light at the end of the tunnel, and hopefully it doesn't involve Tom Brady and Antonio Brown skipping through it on their way to kiss their sons on the mouth. Bet Online's going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on all the action imaginable this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, Bet Online gives you more options to wager than any other place online. Head to BetOnline today and use the promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
So we know our 2021 season opponents. I had heard ahead of time that it was going to be a little tougher this year. And then I started looking down and I see I see the Bengals, I see the Bears, Denver, Detroit, and then I see Green Bay, Chiefs, Titans.
Ravens, Browns. It's going to
I left those off, obviously.
This is what you get for the first place schedule. And when we say next year could be rough, it's not a joke. It's just a sad reality. I kind of look at the Steelers now very early as in, you know, 7-9 to 9-7, fighting for a wild card. They could put a great season together and win 10 games, you know. They're the damn Steelers. But it's a rough road with what's been stacked up against them for next year. So that's interesting. That's something to look forward to. You get to see Patrick Mahomes play, but Aaron Rodgers. But, yeah, looking a little rough.
So the other thing I missed, sorry, the Steelers are going to be choosing 24th overall in the first round of the 2021 draft. Are you curious to know what our average draft pick is in the first round over the last 10 years?
Probably that. It's probably 24.
Close. It's actually 22 because we had the advantage of, well, remember we had to, we moved up for Bush to spot 10 and we got Shazier at 15 in 2014.
Wow, that was great.
So tomorrow is a very special day. I think I mentioned today is Monday, January 18th. Tomorrow, voting for the NFL Hall of Fame, and we have Al Faneca back again and Bill Nunn up for the award. So we will track that, and Nicholas, I assume you, with everybody else, will be tweeting out the results. Hopefully,
you have to assume.
Yeah,
you have to assume Faneca's not going to get in again, which is ridiculous because there's a great argument to be made that the best players of the era, you know, are Ben, Troy, and Faneca. But Faneca's a guard. It was like a 9-time All-Pro. I mean, obviously, you know, AB. But, like, it's just so sad that he's getting screwed for being an offensive lineman. I hope they finally do the right thing and let him in. But, yeah, I don't know.
I don't know if they should be letting the top 10 players in every year versus let's allocate by position because how else is a guard going to get in there?
Yeah, and you would have to have the stipulation, hey, if there's not a guard that deserves to make it, let's not do it.
But of course not.
Faneca's the definition. You know, Pouncey is someone who might go into the Hall of Fame who wasn't even quite as good as Faneca. And I love Pouncey. He's one of my favorite Steelers of all time. But he's been making the Pro Bowl the past few years just on reputation. And he's kind of one of those guys like, oh, we know his name, so he's making it. Faneca was actually that guy. And he wasn't just making Pro Bowl. He's making the important one, the All-Pro. 8 or 9 friggin' times. Like, this is real deal. So, sucks that he's not making it. Hey, question for you. Here's another thing that the NFL world was talking about yesterday. The play in the Browns game, which they lost. Getting knocked out of the playoffs and eliminated for all of eternity. Higgins, at the end of the first half, it's 16-3. Chiefs are up. Baker Mayfield, who had a good game besides the crossbody interception he threw in the fourth quarter. Doesn't seem like a playoff quarterback thing to do. I don't know. But he had a good game, and he led them down the field. Hits Higgins on a crosser. Higgins is making a beeline towards the end zone. It's him and the safety Sorensen for the Chiefs. They're going to collide, basically at the 1-yard line. So Higgins dives, outstretched arms, and he gets hit by Sorensen, and the ball fumbles out of the back of the end zone, and it's a turnover. It's Chiefs ball. And everybody on the internet is saying not only that it's a bad rule, they're all using the hacky cliche, and I can't think of any phrases for myself. This is, quote, the worst rule in sports. What do you think about that? Because I 1,000% disagree. I think the rule's fine.
State the rule.
The rule is if an offensive player is going into the end zone and he fumbles before he crosses the goal line and the ball rolls out of the end zone, then it's like the other team gets the ball at their own 20-yard line. And I don't think it's bad because, number one, all the players know the damn rule, right? The rules are different in the end zone anyways, as Jesse James showed us. You can't just catch it and put 2 feet down. You got to do a somersault or whatever. I don't know. It's just different. If the nose of the football crosses on a run play, it's a touchdown. But if it crosses on a pass play, it's not a touchdown. If the ball hits when you hit the ground, you know, to me, the offensive players all know the rule. When a player is diving towards the end zone, if it's Steelers player, you and I are yelling at the TV, don't do it. His teammates are yelling, don't do it. Right? And Bill Belichick doesn't even let his players reach out towards the end zone like that traditionally because it's too risky. And then the second one that a lot of people are talking about is every damn rule in the rule book helps the offense. If an offensive receiver catches the ball in midair and a defender is going to hit him square in the chest and the offensive player decides to duck his head into the defensive player's helmet, it's a 15-yard penalty on the defense when really it was the offensive guy doing it. We don't need to document all the rules that help the offense, but it's getting kind of obscene how many rules do help the offense at this point. And you finally have one that helps the defense. And I don't think it's that weird. The end zone's an important place. You should protect that. The players know not to reach it out. I don't see why it's such a bad rule. I think people are just pissed off because they almost had a great upset.
So just to clarify, The rule that I don't think is right is this, the thing you mentioned where the ball crosses the plane, no matter what, should be a touchdown. Just a millimeter, if they can measure it, if it crosses that white line, it should be a touchdown.
Okay. I think they changed it after
that. So we're not talking about that. Here's my problem. Just because everybody knows the rule doesn't make it a fair rule or a desirable rule. I think that you're right. The end zone is a special part of the field. And I think this rule came, and I'm trying to find it. I wish I did this before the podcast. You know, they implemented this rule based on a play. Was it Oakland who fumbled into the end zone? Anyway, you know what? It seems like, you know, in the Bible, they say eye for an eye, which means proportional response to the violation. It seems like fumbling out of the end zone should not be penalized by giving the ball over. Maybe you could put it out at the 20. It seems extreme.
Cool. Right.
It just seems like an extreme redress for someone. I mean, you got all the way to the end zone and now you're penalized for, you know, that infraction. Way beyond what should be penalized. I'll leave it at that.
Right. But then why do you get 2 points in the ball back when you tackle the quarterback in the end zone? Like, so it's just a special area to get tackled in?
Why do you get
why do we have safeties then? Like, we're implying that the end zone is a more important area. So,
well, you do have the ball in the end zone. In a matter of speaking, you're just told a man is wrapped around the ball.
That's
a good question.
Yeah, so then, but that still speaks to your idea. It's like, okay, well, the end zone should be prioritized, but maybe you just have to get the ball at the 25 now and, like, loss of down. Like, the down counts and you get it back at the 25. Like, I think there should be some increased attention on the end zone.
I agree, and I love the safety. I mean, I think there is something.
I'm still talking about the reach rule.
I'm with you, but you drew that as an analogy or a comparison. Why do they get points for a safety, but you don't have the same kind of? Why would I object to the penalty for fumbling out of the end zone? I think that your back is to the end zone. You have lost all your options, right? At that point, you're pinned. And the end zone is a special place on the field. So I'm good with the safety, and it's also pretty rare. The fumble to me is you've earned 100 yards of field position, and then you actually can lose the ball after all that effort. It doesn't seem like the right penalty to me.
It's definitely extreme. I mean, so that's why I kind of like your idea. It's like maybe you just got to go out to where the touchbacks go, like the 25 or something. But I don't know. I just, like, protect the ball when you're in the end zone. So I, like, when you're an offense, you know, like, hey, don't drop back in your own end zone because, you know, there's a risk of a safety. This area is more important. It's more emphasized than the other areas. So if you take the risk of dropping back in the end zone, you might get a great play. Like, Ben's made so many times to Martavis and Juju and Santonio Holmes and all these guys. You get the risk reward. Well, if you want to reach the ball out and try and score, maybe it should just be like a safety. Maybe you get 2 points and they get the ball back, and that's just how we treat the end zone. But I do think it should be emphasized. I do not think that you should just get the ball at the one there for fumbling at the end zone.
So, as you've been pointing out, there were some playoff games this weekend. Our other arch rival found themselves out of the playoff. And can I tell you the most astounding thing about that game?
What?
Justin Tucker misses two crazy, eminently makeable field goals.
Well, it sucks for us because that means he's not going to miss another one for two more years. He's gotten them out of the way. Yeah, it just shows that Lamar is so freaking good. You have to grade him on a different level because the running is so out of this world. It's like Tyreek Hill and him are just unstoppable as runners. But the passing is not there yet. He's too inconsistent. And their weapons aren't good enough. I mean, Marquise Brown's like 5'7". Snead is okay. Andrews, their tight end's great. But they need to figure out a way to coordinate a better passing game. And Lamar has to improve. And they need some better receivers. Here's my question, though. So Drew Brees gets knocked out of the playoffs, right? And I'm watching that game. And I think, like, because I'm watching the games before. And I watch Baker Mayfield sneak it for a first down. And I just shake my head. Like, this is what it's like watching a team play. I watched Tom Brady drop back in the pocket and hit a skinny post. I watched Chad Henne drop back and hit a skinny post. Like, I remember this. This is how we watched football for 16 years. And we didn't get to watch that this year. The Steelers are playing with two hands tied behind their back. We don't use motion. We don't use play action. We can't run. We don't throw over the middle of the field. We don't do QB sneaks. We do, like, there's so many taboos here. The Mormons of offense here. No offense, but there's just a lot of restrictions there. You know what I'm saying? And I'm watching these other teams, like, it is just crazy how hard the Steelers are making on themselves. And to me, my hero, Ben, athletic hero that way, I love him so much. I don't want to see him go out terribly. You know, we saw what we saw this year. He can still play. He's not Drew Brees, but the fluctuations are wild, and there's not a lot of reason to believe next year will be much better. If anything, it could be worse. But it is sort of like, dude, you are if you're the reason for this, and it's not just Fietner, you're literally trying to win the Super Bowl with a hand tied behind your back, and there's other guys out there like Josh Allen and Mahomes who will have no problem beating you with that hand tied behind your back. When I watched the Saints, I felt the same thing. They're playing with the hand tied behind their back with Drew Brees. The man just cannot get the ball, you know, 10 yards downfield. It just takes so much effort for him. And so he's retiring, all-time great. And everybody celebrates his performance, which has been much worse than Ben's. If you watch them both, I mean, Ben can still throw the ball. Brees can't throw the ball. Sean Payton can drop 100 different plays for Kamara to get it 2 yards past the line of scrimmage, and the stats will look good. But Michael Thomas didn't have a single catch yesterday, the alleged best receiver in the NFL. When did that ever happen to Antonio Brown? Never. Like, literally, it didn't happen. I always get annoyed because I love Drew Brees. I grew up loving Drew Brees, short quarterback. And I still do, but I just hate the media response to him, why he gets propped up as this, like, some people were calling him a top five quarterback, which is literal insanity. He's an all-time great quarterback. Nobody has a problem with, like, his team goes 9-1 when he's not in the game. Sean Payton, if you know what you're watching, he's clearly designing so many plays for the first damn read to be open, the same way it happens with Tom Brady. And that doesn't mean Drew isn't great. He's definitely great. His pinpoint accuracy, his processing, and everything. But the stats are the reason why he gets cited as unbelievable. And the stats are inflated by people other than him. So that's just what I'm trying to say. And people are kind of celebrating the end of his career, where they make fun of Ben for the end of his career, when Ben has looked actually much better than Drew Brees this year. But at the end of the day, you got to love Drew Brees because he's the man. And he helped that city after Katrina, you know, giving them a lot of hope. And he works with the city a lot. And he's just a freaking great guy. But they go 15 years, they only get one Super Bowl appearance. And this is why I'm saying the Packers, the Steelers, and the Saints are really the only true franchises who have known true pain over the past 10 years. Because when you're the Browns and the Bills, you don't have any expectation of winning at the beginning of the year. You're just hoping to become relevant. With the Steelers, you're knowing every year, like, this could be the year. And every year we don't get it, it could be the end, you know? And the same thing with the Saints. How do you look at, to end this podcast, how do you look at the last decade of Steelers football, which may be extending one more year here with Ben coming back, but sort of feels like it's kind of coming to an end here? Is it a failure because they had a couple teams in there who seemed talented enough to actually win the game and they couldn't get it done? Is it a failure because they didn't just get knocked out of the postseason by better teams? They got embarrassed and they didn't show up to those games? Or is it just, hey, it's friggin' impossible to win these damn Super Bowls. Nobody else won multiple except for the Patriots, who are the exception to the rule, and it was fun watching them try.
You're talking to a guy who has experienced exactly one championship in his entire life, including adult night gym, rec ball. Look, it's not a failure. I think the stars were never so aligned that the Steelers were a fait accompli.
Yeah.
To get to the Super Bowl, when you think about the Killer Bees, we were fending off a less than effectual defense. We never had either the overpowering offense or overpowering defense where you had you were serviceable on the other side of the line.
Right. I do agree with
you. We always were sort of fighting upstream on one side of the ball or another, or the special team. So it was always going to be a dogfight to get there. And, you know, 32 teams. It's, you know, to get to what we're talking about next week, the conference championships, is an accomplishment, let alone to get to the ultimate contest.
Yeah, I do agree with you. I think we look with some rose-colored glasses about those defenses. I mean, they weren't just bad. They were literally the worst defenses in the league with the Killer Bees. I'm just upset that they were so inept on those defensive sides of the ball, and Tomlin was so slow to make changes, because they could have done a few extra things early to make that defense okay, and they should. And I do think with the way Ben played, with his connection with Brown and Bell, and that offensive line in particular, they should have at least gotten to one other Super Bowl. And so that's the big disappointment for me.
Yeah, I think that's the lock for me that we talked about earlier in the show, that Tomlin sort of hangs on to his reality, and that times inhibits his ability, you know, his flexibility or the ability to pivot, make changes at halftime or for next season, because right. He seemed to be so dogmatic about certain things, and that sort of held us back. But next weekend, Tampa Bay Buccaneers at Green Bay, followed by Buffalo at Kansas City. What's the most likely upset in those two contests?
I think they're extremely even. I don't know which one's more. I mean, like, would the Bucs be upsetting the Packers when they already beat them by 30 this year? Albeit that was down in Florida. Now you're going to be in chilly Green Bay. Obviously, Tom Brady won't have a problem with that weather, but is the team not used to playing it? The Bills peaked at the end of the season, and then they actually haven't played that well in the postseason. So, but Mahomes, you know, he'll play next week, concussion or not. They're saying it's nerve damage on his neck, which is crap.
Who cares?
he's playing. But look, I'll just say this. So, yeah, maybe I would say the Buccaneers would be the most likely. But I'll say this. Steelers aren't in it, so screw all these teams. Hope they all lose. But particularly the Buccaneers need to lose. Antonio Brown cannot go to a championship, and I'm done with Tom Brady going to championships. But the AFC Championship, this might be the most explosive matchup we've seen since, like, the prime of Peyton Manning versus Tom Brady. I mean, to get Michael Jordan, Mahomes, against the superstar of Josh Allen, they have so many similarities, those two guys, with how explosive they are and the plays they make. I really hope that that's an AFC Championship game for the ages, because I don't think I can think of a more exciting quarterback matchup. And even Peyton versus Brady, you know, those guys were surgeons. These dudes are – it's LeBron versus Michael Jordan in a certain way. And obviously, you know, I'm not saying as their full career, but where Josh Allen is right now, it's so exciting. And I do hope that Aaron Rodgers gets there. And I'm rooting for Rodgers to win the Super Bowl, because I think, to me, Rodgers is the best quarterback of ever. And it's just a commentary to how they were never able to put together a defense around him. They didn't sign a damn free agent until 2 years ago. They didn't do free agency. They're like the Steelers. They were lackadaisical and ironclad in their ways. And I just get tired of Tom Brady automatically getting called the best quarterback of all time, when I think he's certainly a top five quarterback. And there's an argument to be the number one. But just let's stop the conversation at number one quarterback ever, because of the accomplishments of him combined with amazing defenses and coaching. It just seems so lazy to me. So to get Aaron that second one and to win one for the old guys is pretty cool. But wow, to get Tom Brady and Rodgers of the old era versus the new era of Mahomes and Allen, it's a pretty beautiful set of matchups, just as long as it's Antonio Brown.
Follow us on Twitter at Steelers Outpost. Shoot us an email at SteelersOutpost@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Until next week. Go Steelers.
Okay, bye-bye. Love your shoes here. Okay, so there's some administrative stuff. Let's get to some more juicy things. Should I have said this at the top of the podcast? Can you edit this and put this back in the top of the podcast, please? At one point? Okay, so you guys might hear this right now. You'll hear it again. We're just going to do... I'm going to give you a quick sound bite for the beginning of the podcast.
Cleveland sucks! You losers! 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 How does it feel? Oh, that was embarrassing! With about a couple minutes left in the fourth quarter of a divisional game against one of the most hyped teams in history, the Kansas City Chiefs, Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns in the playoff for the first time in 18 years have a chance to grab the NFL by the cojones and go down the field, score, make a statement for this glory-starved city. And what do? Three and out. Punt it. And lose to a 47-year-old backup quarterback named Chad Henne. You guys lost to Chad Henne. Not only did you lose to Chad Henne, you lost on a 20-yard run to Chad Henne. And my favorite part of this weekend is all the crying Browns fans who have been total dicks the entire time since they've got even decent. We didn't even do anything to you. We didn't taunt you while you were bad. Why?
because it wasn't worth it. It's literally taking candy from a baby for 20 years, and now you're here in a rivalry. Good, great, great. We understand that. You're mad at your father. Your father is a stepdad. First we beat you, then you hate us. And that's what the Steelers have been. But now the Browns are on quite the pedestal for themselves. Ha ha, yes they are. Well, how well did that go? They're all tweeting now, trying to tweet the final score of the Steelers game in response to us trolling them for that loss. We don't care. We don't care. We've already been going through that loss. That's done. I mean, it lives with us forever. Yeah, I'll remember that. Great. But it's not about us right now. You can say whatever you want. Sure. But you choked. You choked big time. You punted? And not even to Patrick Mahomes. You punted? And then you give up a 20-yard run to a 47-year-old Caucasian quarterback, and he doesn't even get the first down. It's 4th and 1. You give up that in 4th and 1. The other team went for it on 4th and 1, and you lost big time. But here's the best part. The true pain hasn't really set in because they had such a magical storybook season, and they're thinking in their minds, hey, we get Odell Beckham friggin' Jr. back next year. We're going to – Baker's still on his rookie deal. We're going to be even better next year. We'll be back here again. No, you won't. No, you won't. Nobody ever is. Only the Patriots are back. Only Patrick Mahomes comes back. You might get close again. Hey, they're probably going to the playoffs next year. They'll probably even be the favorite to win the division next year. But unless you have Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, the chances of you winning the Super Bowl are as close to zero as you can possibly be. Because it's like that for every team. There's some miracle team that comes out of nowhere every once in a while that makes it happen. Sean Payton, Drew Brees, 15 years together, 1 Super Bowl appearance. Ben Roethlisberger hasn't been to a Super Bowl in 10 years. Aaron Rodgers, same amount of time. And you think the Browns aren't going to do it? No. Welcome to true pain as a football fan. You've never felt it. All you've had is this latent, we suck, you know, a shame associated with your name. Bags over your heads. I imagine that sucks, right? Maybe we're heading towards that. I don't know. I hope not. But that's not real pain because you never had anything to lose. That's why when, you know, Russians capture Americans in movies, they torture them for a little while. And then they let them out. But they don't really let them out. They let you think that you got out. And then you're running out of the base and you're in the snow and like, I'm free, I'm free. And then, bam, a net catches you and puts you back into the cell. And they say, that's why I let you think you were free, because you had nothing to lose. Now you're truly being tortured because you've lost your freedom again. That's what's happening to you guys. You suck. And it was great to watch.